your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstand Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
Of a year, so many people want us to look back, not necessarily to learn from the past, but to briefly remember the awkward, the silly, the scary things. I'm not much of looking back, but there are certain moments in the past that deserve our attention. Here's one. Earlier this month, the State Commerce and Labor Committee refused to repeal the Payday Loan Act of 2002. Payday, or paycheck lenders, are those businesses giving you money before your paycheck actually arrives, charging both a fee and an interest rate while doing so. The Payday Loan Act grants exemption to payday lenders from loan sharking, lifting the 36% APR limit on loans made by these businesses. The 2002 Act has enabled payday lenders to impose a triple-digit APR, often more than 300%, but up to 780%, as now legal. The result has been an explosion of payday lending in Virginia, with almost 800 locations having sprung up across the Commonwealth since 2002. That's more than two payday loan shops for every McDonald's and three for every Starbucks. In 2005, more than 3 million payday loans were made in Virginia, with the total amount of these loans being more than $1 billion. In addition, more than 50% of these loan companies are owned by out-of-state businesses. As a consequence, over $167 million in fees flowed out of our state. A payday loan only postpones a financial crisis for 2 weeks, and just 1% of borrowers are able to repay the loans within that period. Instead, they become trapped in a cycle of debt, driven by repeated loans and fees. Each additional loan is used to pay off previous ones made by the lender. Repealing the Payday Loan Act of 2002 would have required that these businesses operate under the same regulations as other banks and lenders. But alas, 10 state legislators provided a happy holiday for a slimeball business and a bah humbug to Virginians who could have used the help. If you want to look back in remembrance, let's do so when the next Virginia election takes place. And remember these 10 people who didn't give a darn about you. By the way, I have the names of those 10 people if you want to email me. And then you can send them nasty emails yourself, letting them know how you feel. It's just awful what they allow to happen in our state. AbstractMe@AOL.com. Well, happy end of the year, folks. It is December 31st, 2006. Thanks for joining us here on the Wake Up Call, the last show of this year before we roll on into 2007. As I said early in that little rant, I'm not much on looking back. Once I change jobs, I tend to move on to the new one. Former relationships don't always, while we may remain friendly, we don't get together much. But we'll take a little bit of time today to look back on 2006, but the focus is our political future in 2007, and I brought in the expert, the friend of the wake-up call here in the studio today, Professor R.K. Ramazani. Professor, how are you today?
Fine, thank you.
I appreciate you coming in and joining us.
Glad to be with you again.
There you go. Talk in that side of it. It will be just lovely. Professor, it's always nice to have folks join us on Sunday morning. I realize that Sundays aren't, a lot of people have other things going on, whether it's church or family, and a lot of folks use the Sunday morning as the sleep-in time to catch up on some reading that you haven't done, to do your do the crossword puzzle that you love to do. So it's especially nice for me to have folks who have a lot of outside interests and things happening in their lives and who've been here before and felt that they were welcome enough to come back. So thank you. Take a moment and let our new listeners know about your past and why I consider you an expert. You are a professor emeritus from the University of Virginia, and as you mentioned out in the lobby, it's been more than 40 years since your first radio or television appearance. Toss out a few other media outlets where you could have been seen or heard.
Well, let me mention, apart from the local stations and newspaper, I had an extraordinary experience. After the hostage crisis, or during the hostage crisis, when I was asked to go to the White House during Jimmy Carter's presidency as to how we can resolve the hostage crisis. And the media got to know about it, and therefore, I was invited by NBC, the program that was called, I believe is still there, is called Meet the Press.
Yes.
And I had the whole half an hour with three or four people asking questions, and I responded. And then they put it hypothetically as to what would I have said to President Carter. They knew I had talked to him. But I tried to indicate what I would say in advising as to how to resolve the hostage crisis. So that became really one of the major radio or TV appearances I had in that long era. But later on, I have had what was called Jim Lehrer, McNeil Lehrer, and Jim Lehrer Report, and CNN, national and international, and just name it. Ted Koppel at one time.
And now you can add the Wake Up Call to your your list of wondrous and well-known outlets.
Well, I do think so. But anyway, Rick, it is a long story, and I have always done it, I have to say, not as self-gratification only, but in terms of really public service. I have locally, for example, tried to provide a commentary or op-ed for Daily Progress, and people who read the newspaper every now and then have seen my commentary on various issues almost every month in the Sunday paper. So I think it's a public service. I think it is fine to stand in the classroom and have seminars and formal lectures outside in the country or overseas, but locally in particular, because I have been about 55 years in Charlottesville, I feel great attachment to the place and its people.
Now, I'm sure that for those who haven't heard you on this program before, they recognize your accent. What is your what is your, I guess for lack background. Of a better term, ethnic background?
Sure. Well, I was born in Iran, Persia, and I immigrated to the United States in 1952 and became actually, after a few months in Georgia, we ended up in Charlottesville. My interest in the university was because I already had a doctorate, a master's degree in law and politics, and I wanted to pursue a doctorate in international law and diplomacy. And I therefore went to the law school at the university, and it so happened that my mentor subsequently became World Court Justice by the name Hardy C. Dillard. And it was a wonderful time. And before even I was finished with my doctoral studies, I was asked by the Woodrow Wilson, then what's called Woodrow Wilson Department, a School of Foreign Affairs, not department, and to start teaching. And in a sense, I did the first course on a regular basis on the Middle East. And also for about 15 years, I taught U.S. foreign policy as well as international law. That was very close to my heart and still is.
And you've been here ever since?
I have been ever since 1952.
All right. So that is our guest today, Professor R.K. Ramazani. Professor, let's just jump right in now, for those of you listening to the wake-up call on the last day of the year. Biggest news, we're not going to look back, and I don't want to do the best and worst of 2006, but it's hard not to begin our look at the upcoming year and years without jumping into some of the things that happened this week. Biggest news of the week, it seems, in terms of political, foreign affairs, etc., the execution of Saddam Hussein. I'm curious as to, does this have, in any way, in your opinion, have a positive effect? Does it have a positive effect on the current military troops, American military troops? Are they all going, yeah, you know, we won that battle? American citizens, the UN, fellow, you know, American supporters, other countries that are American supporters. In any way, does it have a positive effect?
Positive from whose perspective?
Well, as the American citizen.
As Americans, I cannot read the American mind, but all I can say is, generally speaking, Saddam Hussein has been such a demonized person, leader, in our country here, particularly since the first invasion of Saddam Hussein to Kuwait, and of course before that there was an aggression against Iran, which really led to a war of 80 years, bloody war, and some people say about a million dead on both sides. But therefore, to us in America, in the Western world, Saddam Hussein has been certainly a cruel, brutal dictator, and it was good to see the end of it. But this is a very general statement. I think when we look at the president's own remark, to label the execution of Saddam Hussein as a milestone, and I wondered what it is a milestone to. Is it another milestone and watershed and victory and turning point that the president has been using for over the past 2 or 3 years about every event of major development, so to speak, in Iraq, some of which have been pretty negative, but has been labeled as a milestone or some kind of a progress. Now, this is a progress, certainly in the sense that we did away with the dictator. I mean, no American, no, frankly, for anybody other than Americans, can ever deny that Saddam Hussein was a brutal dictator. And the real problem is the question how this is perceived in the Middle East and generally speaking in the Muslim world. And I think there is a terrible mix of reactions to this, and some of the reactions cut across sectarian, you might say, conflict and violence that is going on. And the Shias in general, who were downtrodden and brutalized by Saddam Hussein, generally are jubilant about it. The Sunnis, on the other hand, who were the beneficiaries of Saddam Hussein's rule and dictatorship, they are out of power. They are actually outmaneuvered by the Shias, who really constitute the main government, so to speak, of Iraq. And so they generally, again, are unhappy as Sunnis. Saddam was a Sunni, was from an area called Tikrit, a village. He was part of a tribe, Tikritic tribe.
Did I read, not to interrupt, did I read correctly that this execution happened just days before a major Muslim traditional holiday of some sort?
Not days, almost, some people say, minutes or hours.
Was that? I mean, you would think that, even though many people have claimed that our current administration doesn't have enough or doesn't pay enough attention to such things, but it seems as though that would have been intentional.
Well, you know,
have we heard that? Has it been said that it was intentional to do it at that time?
Well, again, the claim is that before the Muslim celebration holiday, this was done. And there are questions as to why it was a rush to execution. And New York Times, I was happy to see, had a wonderful editorial on this whole question of execution of Saddam Hussein and what it meant and could mean. So there may have been some sensitivity, but what we did was that we had Saddam Hussein in our custody for 3 years, and then the last minute for the executioner, we were handed him, so to speak, to the Iraqi government, Iraqi officials. What is bothersome to me, if I may wear my international law hat, and generally speaking, in terms of law, is the tainted, in my view, trial of Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein could have been tried in an international court like Milosevic of Yugoslavia. That was not done. Therefore, it is it was a trial, really, organized, funded, and some facets of it actually decided by the United States. This is why we hear, for example, from Lebanon, people who believe that the entire trial and execution was American-backed. And that is not a very good thing for us. And the other thing is, the as Americans, not to talk about international law per se, there is such a very fundamental notion, going back to Magna Carta days in Anglo-American legal system. And that is called due process of law. Now, if you look at the trial of Saddam Hussein, you cannot miss the reality of what a flawed trial it was in terms of three, at least, of the defense attorneys were murdered. One was Kipner, the first one, and then murdered. And the judges were scared to death for their lives and so on. The whole process for Saddam Hussein was a forum to speak to his supporters, so to speak. And what was depressing to me to see is that at the time of putting the rope around his neck, Shia talks to him that you're damned or you're going to hell. And of course, he replies immediately that you're going to hell. Now, that has broad significance. It shows that there was this sectarian dimension of revenge to the killing of Saddam Hussein. And of course, he had his own venom in terms of an condemning the Americans and in the same breath condemning the Persians because Saddam Hussein always considered the Iranian Revolution, even before the Iranian Revolution, as a bad thing for Iraq. Otherwise, he would not have invaded that country. But it's interesting to me that before he dies, he talks about America and Iran or Persia as the bad things, bad guys, bad powers. And to many Iraqis, this would appear to be that Saddam, after all, was a nationalist. He was against foreign occupation like American, and he was against Persians because he considered the Iranians as a threat to Iraq, and today he considers probably Iranians meddling in Iraq, and therefore, yeah. So it's very complex, but my own view about the future of it is when the history is written, the details are better known, and no headlines anymore, I think we will come to realize that this whole thing could have been handled in a more compatible with our own values and international law principles.
All right, 11:23 here in the wake-up call as we talk about upcoming political future here with UVA Professor Middle East Specialist R.K. Ramazani. Feel free to dial us up if you have questions or comments. 979-0919. Take a break from getting ready for your big night tonight down at First Night Virginia or wherever you may be. 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. The markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy with a chance of rain today. Highs 45 to 50. Rain tonight, lows 40 to 45. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a little chance of rain. Highs 60 to 65 in the valley. In Lynchburg, it's 46. In Richmond, it's 48. And here in Charlottesville, it's 43.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
We want to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They have footwear for the season from Merrow, UGG, and Vasque, plus clothing, including head and handwear from Patagonia, Mountain Hardware, and the North Face. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen in Richmond and at BRMS.com. Plus, there's 4-5 Fix. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor from kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding. It's 4-5-Fix.com. immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And here on the Wake Up Call with Professor Ramazani, it's the number 979 and the number's 0919. Dial us up, ask your question as we look ahead as to what's how some of our more recent issues might affect our upcoming lifestyles. So, Professor, with Saddam Hussein has been executed, and whether you or I or anyone out there listening might believe it was intentional to do it on the Muslim, just at the Muslim holiday, and whether or not it should have been handled in world court or was handled properly, et cetera, how will it affect our upcoming future? Because even President Bush says that the hanging will not end the violence. And my understanding of, and it doesn't matter whether you're for or against the death penalty, my understanding that one of the reasons always given for the death penalty is that it was to prevent future crimes. So I'm not sure that I understand why the American administration would be for hanging Saddam Hussein if that behavior, if that act won't complete what has always been argued as part of the reasoning for the death penalty. And I don't want to get into whether he should have or should not have been executed. But when the president says that the hanging will not end the violence, so what will it do? Will it create, do we have to be even more concerned with violence coming to America or with our troops over there in wherever they are, whether they're in Iraq or whether they're in some other country, you know, some of the worst terrorist acts ever didn't necessarily take place in America or or in Iraq. There are lots of times when we can pick out something that took place in a country that was unexpected. The coal boat, embassies, etc. So what happens next?
I don't really think, Rick, at this time there will be much of a reaction to his execution. Already, although the violence is continuing, I think there was great fear that the execution per se would intensify violence. But the pattern of violence has been more or less the same. This has been probably, for American soldiers, one of the worst months in terms of casualties. And, of course, the Iraqis have always had enormous amount of casualties. So Saddam's death is, again, from our perspective, from the perspective of a lot of people in the world, is a closing of a chapter of a dictator and a brutal ruler and so on and so forth. And frankly, in terms of the acts he committed, not only the invasion of Kuwait and Iran, but the use of gas against the Kurds and against the Iranian soldiers, this was abominable and was a terrible precedent that such a thing would be done. And in that sense, in that narrow sense, it might be some kind of a indication that he got a punishment proportionate to the kinds of crimes he committed. Now, yeah, that can be argued. But again, the idea of killing him in Iraq, executing him in Iraq, was that it would assuage a Shia majority feeling, and the Kurds, of course, they were both victimized by Saddam Hussein. And closes the chapter of expectation of his supporters that Saddam himself would come back or his supporters would come back and Iraq would again be dominated by the Sunni faction. Beyond that, it is very difficult to say what impact it will have. We already have the reports that the reaction of the Iraqis has been somewhat tamed in the sense that they are so preoccupied with lack of electricity, adequate water system, and their, especially the lack of security, a knock on the door and a fear of, you know, somebody breaking in and killing people. So the sense of insecurity is so deep with the violence that is going on that Saddam Hussein's violence would become a child's play in their eyes.
You know, you mentioned the December being such a great death toll for American troops. And people often overlook the Iraqis and how they're caught up in things, and I don't wish to do so. But one interesting note, I believe that at the end of this week, either Friday or yesterday, that the death toll for U.S. troops in Iraq has now surpassed the death toll for the number of people killed on 9/11. Is that anything of note other than two horrific numbers? Is that something where you say, okay, we're all even, or does it make things worse, or do we just keep going on until someone in significant power makes a change?
Well, the numbers per se obviously just alert us to what is going on, that we have had this number of people killed, but the real question is how that, let's say, roughly 3,000 American soldiers dead and 22,000 perhaps maimed and injured, what does that mean? In terms of policy, these are supposed to be sacrifices by the Americans for certain goals, and that is where the problem comes, and that is what is our goal, and what is the mission of the military. This is a paramount question, because if one looks at the suggestion by some that we should have a surge of troops in Iraq, because that's perhaps the way to bring under control the violence in, let's say, at least Baghdad, then you wonder, well, what is again the larger goal of American foreign policy? At the beginning, it seemed to be weapons of mass destruction concern, which turned to be unproven. And relationship to Al-Qaeda, which came to be, again, unproven. But then we talked about democracy. Now we still talk about democracy is achievable in Iraq. But I am not very optimistic about that. And the reasons are many. So, again, whether they are Americans dead in the battlefield or otherwise, it is incumbent on all of us as American citizens to ask the fundamental question as to what are our goals for which we are making these sacrifices.
11:35 here on the Wake Up Call. As we talk with University Professor R.K. Ramazani, Middle East specialist, talking about politics and our future in 2007, some of the upcoming issues. And of course, you have to look back a little bit. We're just not doing the best and worst of 2006 show. Professor, and I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's always going to be difficult. By the way, if you want to call in with a question or comment, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free number if you're maybe you're on the new Harrisonburg or Lexington or Richmond dial. The upcoming, because we've already started, people have already started announcing that they're in the presidential election race for 2008. How do you believe that foreign affairs, and particularly Middle East concerns, will play a role in that?
That is a question of our situation in Iraq is clearly a dominant question, and perhaps even at the moment more of concern than our economy or particularly national deficit. But the expectation of a change in the White House to have an effect upon the Middle East policy, I think the president has said it, and many have said that this problem is going to be with us and will transcend the term of the second term of this president. So the Middle East problem is going to be with us, at the top of which is, of course, the question of Iraq, whether or not we can extricate ourselves in an honorable, so to speak, way, or, as some suggest, we should have simply planned or at least have a timetable for withdrawal of troops.
But will someone who's attempting to be president in 2008... Does Hillary Clinton really have a chance to win since she's a woman? And we all know that traditionalist Muslim countries don't have a lot of respect for women. Well, someone who comes with little background in politics or certainly in foreign affairs, can they say, okay, not my specialty, but I can hire, you know, I can appoint some great people to help me? Are those sorts of people, will they have a true opportunity to win?
To win
in 2008. Caller, hang on for a sec.
Whoever is going to be the next president, again, is going to have to face the problem in the Middle East. That's going to be the dominant issue, whether it is Palestinian-Israeli question. And at the moment, again, it is Iraq and also the concern with the Iran's nuclear issue and so on. But there is, if I understand you right, Greg, I think there is something to say about whether it's Hillary or Obama or whoever gets the presidency or on the Republican side, whether there would be a kind of a change in the attitude toward the expertise, knowledge, and input into our policy-making decisions. And that, to me, is of great importance. Because, to the best of my knowledge, the attitude of this administration has been largely one of freezing out experts, especially those who may be disagreeing with the thrust and policies of the administration. Now, perhaps a new president would realize that it is extremely important to have not only official expertise input into our foreign policy deliberations and decisions, but also non-official expertise and so on, to be included in the process so we would come up with better ideas about what to do. And I don't think that is quite answering your question, Rick, but I think that's the way I can I can see there would be a change. The problem of the Middle East, in other words, will continue, but as to how it is managed, it will depend significantly on the kind of a presidency. Leadership is fundamental to whether or not there will be a change.
So you're saying it's personality?
Personality and leadership. Today, for example, we have a lot of eulogy about Ford. I remember distinctly that at the time of forgiving or pardoning Nixon, it wasn't in many people's
right, he could view. Have been elected in 76, but was not.
It was not. That's right. But again, today we are saying, praising him for his leadership, that he was the man of the moment, that he knew that it would be better to have a pardon in terms of healing the division within America. If there is any question of healing, I think at this time we need more than ever before a president to come in 2008 who would be a healer, who, because our country, in my opinion, this society has never been as polarized, partisan about issues that, to me, again, in terms of 55 years of experience, it has been unprecedented that we cannot give and take across the aisle, and we cannot have Democrats and Republicans, despite their disagreement, not be disagreeable.
All right, 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk with University Professor R.K. Ramazani. Bob, who was on the 979 line, I apologize. Please dial back. I'm going to do this, and hopefully you'll dial in. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, it's the 2006 year in review issue. Recaps of the 2006 news stories, the hot seat interviews, and a look at the best and worst of the past year. Plus, Madam Hook, the clairvoyant, looks deep into 2007. The Hook, reminding you there are only 358 shopping days until next Christmas. Five Guys Burgers and Fries is also one of our supporters today. They are Seville Reader's Choice for burgers. Five Guys serves America's standard, fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the Downtown Mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's FIVEguys.com. And don't go anywhere. He's already in the studio. George Bell for Les Temps Purdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Foreigner, no Michael Jackson, no Celine Dion, but you will hear the Waterboys, and No Doubt. And requests are always welcome. That's Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only here on WNRN. All right, back to Professor Ramazani. Professor, it's really going to be tough to, not that we can or would want to ignore this, the Baker-Hamilton report, something that came out late in 2006, and we're still waiting, I guess, for the president's response to it, as his speech on any potential changes sometime in 2007. Thoughts on that?
Well, I certainly do. I think this is study, if read carefully, is probably as balanced as one could imagine, not only because of the personality of the two co-chairs, that is, former Secretary of State Jim Baker, the third, and, of course, Lee Hamilton, former congressman. I happen to know something about Congressman Hamilton, I had some interaction with him when he was in Congress. But apart from the personalities and wisdom of the two gentlemen and their enormous credibility, this study has been done very carefully, and it is quite balanced. It is quite far-sighted, and yet they are admitting it is not infallible, that there may be weaknesses in the report. Nevertheless, it charts a way of extricating ourselves from Iraq without endangering our fundamental interests.
Professor, let me interrupt for a second, because I let Bob hang on so long the last time that we didn't get his call, and we have David. So let me punch up David on the phone. David, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, question, comment?
I have a question for Dr. Ramazani. I just want to thank you for sharing your New Year's Eve with us, since it's likely to be a busy day for you. Really appreciate your wisdom and perspective on this. I know you've probably given lots of counsel to lots of folks over the years about foreign policy, particularly U.S. policy in the Middle East, and I just wanted to thank you for playing that role. The question I would like to pose, just to get your response to, is it seems to me like one of the weaknesses of United States government is that the administrations turn over so frequently. You know, other countries have leadership for many more years and are able to sustain foreign policy. And I wonder if what would you think about the idea of something like the Iraq study group expanding to be a Middle East study group to develop a long-term bipartisan or even tripartisan platform for foreign policy, especially in the Middle East, that would supersede the transitions in leadership, whether they be Democrat, Republican, Independent, in order for America to have a more steady leadership role over the years. Just was curious about your feedback on that.
Hey, great question, David. Thanks for calling.
First of all, thank you, David, for your kind remarks about my role. And I would like to say that the study group, I give you a kind of a specific example, that engaging neighbors of Iraq, which includes, obviously, Iran and Syria in particular, and, of course, Saudi Arabia, etc. But constituting some kind of a international support group, these are their words, international support group, in other words, would include the neighbors, would include the five permanent members of the Security Council, would possibly include Germany and Japan. In other words, the countries that have a stake and interest in the Middle East in general and in Iraq in particular would be involved in the process. And I regret to say that while this could in itself be considered as a fundamental basis for dealing with not only the Iraq problem, as the report also suggests, but an endemic, a long-time problem of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Or for that matter, other regional problems that are considered by the United States inimical to American interests. But the reaction that we already have makes me wonder whether this report really would be honored the way it should be. For example, the president immediately ruled out one of the key suggestions of this report, that talking to Iran is not on the table. Now, that is just like that. And Condoleezza Rice has said exactly the same kind of a thing in a different manner, that no, we cannot talk to the Iranians, because if we do, they want to for us to agree with their nuclear enrichment and so on, and therefore we can't talk. It's dangerous to talk to them. Now, these are such a, to me, an easy way and too facile way of responding to a major study of this kind. And then, finally, this notion has been prevailing ever since the study. Senator McCain, of course, is not the only one, but others who want to see a surge, they are called usually neocons, want a surge of troops in Iraq. That again is contrary to this report's suggestion that adding troops to the existing number of troops on the grounds in Iraq would actually not help, it might even increase the violence. So I don't know whether I have responded to a question, but one could build on this report on the aspect of it which are realistic, are with a view to the problems on the ground in Iraq per se, the divisions within that society along not only sectarian but tribal and ideological lines. So my sadness about this is that the study doesn't seem to be getting the kind of respect and attention that it deserves.
11:52 here in the wake-up call as friend of the program, Professor R.K. Ramazani, has joined us today, the last day of 2006, as we look a little forward instead of a little backwards. I do want to thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support of the program today. Blue Ridge Graphics can be found at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville. They provide custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. We got time for another phone call or two, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I got a whole page of my own questions, so don't feel obligated, but that's what we're here for. Dial us up. Take advantage. By the way, if you're joining us late, www.cvillepodcast.com. Listen to the program live, or not live. You can always listen live, but listen on the podcast site to the whole hour at your computer, or download it onto your iPod and listen to it while you jog around as your New Year's resolution. Professor, we touched on Iran just a little bit there. I believe that in the past week, UN had some non-military sanctions against Iran. Iran said, get lost. We're not going to pay attention to them. And again, your expertise, correct me, that in doing so, they said, you know what? We don't have to listen to anything you say. We don't even want the UN nuclear watchdogs coming through the country anymore. Isn't that kind of how things got started in Iraq?
No. First of all, let's just talk about it very quickly about the sanctions. The sanctions are weak. They're not going to, under the best circumstances, make any impact on Iran's nuclear program. To an extent, perhaps it would make things a bit difficult in terms of technology trade and equipment and so forth. But they are weak. It is a weak sanction. And we should admit it. When the Undersecretary of State Burns talk about this sanction is humiliating Iran, one wonders whether the extent to which we are humiliated, because we have for four solid months tried to get a strong sanctions of the U.S. National UN Security Council and we have gotten this watered-down resolution. Now,
and that was to get Russia and China to go along.
That's correct. That was only that. And Russia and China have such deep commercial interest in Iran that they will never go along with any severe sanctions on that country. China in particular is going to be very negative about going further, although Secretary Rice think that there will be perhaps, probably, she says, tougher sanctions in the future. Now, in regard to Iran's reaction has been that it is, again, our right under the Non-Proliferation Treaty under Article 4 to enrich uranium for peaceful purposes. And that the Iranian parliament has already demanded or commanded the Iranian government to revise its policy or relationship with the inspectors under IEA auspices. In other words, the reaction has been negative, and I am not saying that Iran's situation is not going to be damaged somewhat, because there are voices within Iran itself that considered this path of sanctions is not a desirable one, and Iran perhaps could negotiate, discuss, and so forth. And Russia has regarded this very sanction as a way to encourage negotiations, which is not the kind of a perspective we are taking. We are taking the perspective of punishing Iran, and then, if not enough, further later.
All right, let's, I think what's going to be our last call. Purvis from Flavanna. Hey, Purvis.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good, man.
Greetings to the professor. I have a fairly complicated question, which, of course, deserves more than 3 minutes of an answer. The question is, given that the people, rather than the governments of Iran and the United States, seem to have some affinity for one another, but the governments keep demonizing the other country, and that the hostage crisis took place during Jimmy Carter's presidency, arguably the most moral president in my lifetime, does he see any hope that any president would be able to come to some terms with the Iranian government?
Yeah, where were you like 20 minutes ago? You tossed this out at 11:58. All right, man, thanks so much for the call, and I'll let the professor do his best.
I'm going to ring off. I know he can't answer that in a minute, but
all right.
I just, you know, some hope or not.
Thanks, man. All right, professor.
This is a very important question, and I hate to say that I cannot really address it appropriately, but let me just want to say one word of leadership. If we have the kind of leadership that is required, we can engage Iran despite the kind of a regime we don't like. We don't like. But nevertheless, in the terms of the historical relationship of amity between the two countries, and in terms of the desire of the majority, overwhelming majority of the Iranian people to connect with America, there is no reason we couldn't have the kind of leadership that would transcend, at least in terms of our own values and George Washington's advice, not to have inveterate antipathy to any particular nation, because that will, to a degree, means slaving ourselves. If we have leadership in White House, it can be done.
All right. Professor, thank you so much. Again, every time you come on, I feel like we could do a 2 or 3 hour show. Lots to talk about that we didn't even get to today on my list. I thank you so much. I wish you a nice, safe 2007.
Well, I wish you a happy new year, and all the listeners of this station, I wish them a happy new year. Maybe more than happiness, we will have a peaceful new year.
And it's important that all the listeners, whatever you're doing tonight, please be safe. George is up next with Les Temps Purdue. I'm sure I can talk the professor into coming back at a future time, so save up all those great questions, and we'll see you next week.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.